Coming up next is Sugar in My Bowl. My name's Joyce Jones, and thank you, Elena, and
thank you.
Mike, and what was the other, the...
That was Danny. That was Sebastian.
Danny. Yes. So stay tuned, and be entertained, I hope.
On Tuesday, July 20th at 2 a.m., Sugar in My Bowl will feature musicians, advocate, and bassist Bob Cranshaw. That's Tuesday, July 20th at 2 a.m., right here on WBAI New York, 99.5 FM.
and you're listening to WBAI New York 99.5 FM. This is Sugar in My Bowl. Yeah, that's actually more than I wanted to play because I'm waiting for Bob Crenshaw. Well, he's not here, just so you know. He's not going to be awake at this hour. I'm just waiting for recorded Bob to be available. And what we're listening to right now is from Grant Green's Solid recording. This is a Blue Note recording that was released in 1964. And our players are Grant Green, of course, on guitar, Joe Henderson on tenor sax, James Spaulding on alto sax, McCoy Tyner on piano, Bob Crenshaw, our featured guest of the evening, on bass, and Elvin Jones on drums. And what we just heard was Aesthetic, E-Z-Z, hyphen, T-H-E-T-I-C, by George Russell. It was written by George Russell. What we're listening to right now is Grant's tune, written by Grant Green. We'll listen to a little bit more of it, and while we wait, we will listen to Grant's tune while we wait for Bob Crenshaw and an exchange that I had with him at Local 802 last month. And we have a couple of words from Tom Barney. I didn't get to squeeze in as much as I wanted to of our exchange, but I got a little bit in. Stay tuned. This is WBAI New York 99.5 FM.
Jones, and I'm here with
Bob Crenshaw,
and we're sitting in the offices of Local 802. Yeah,
and I am consultant to the jazz department here at Local 802.
What does that entail?
That entails watching what happens, watching what the union is involved as far as the jazz musicians are concerned. I'm watching the coup. I'm making sure that the union tries to address things that are pertinent to the jazz musician.
People who may not know, you're a staunch advocate for the musician.
Yes.
Being a musician.
Well, one of the things for me as a musician, I've done a lot of TV shows, and I've been involved. I'm the bass player for 30-some years with Sesame Street, The Electric Company, Saturday Night Live, the David Frost TV show, you know, Merv Griffin. I mean, it's just I've done a bunch of things. And through that, there are monies that go into the pension. Each time you record a record, which I've done many of, the company pays into your pension. Money's going to your pension, which I think is very important. And as one of the senior citizens here, I'm 77, and I'll be 78 in December.
I still can't believe that. You look good.
Thank you. Yeah, thank you. I appreciate that. But as one of the guys who came through the union, over the years, I used to watch things that were happening here. Musicians, we play music, and so the contracts and all of these other things, most of the time, we don't care to be bothered with all of that. But sometimes, some of those things are very important for later years. I have a huge pension. I have a comfortable pension. If I didn't do anything at all, I could live on my pension and my Social Security. So, but I'm one of the lucky, right now, I'm one of the fortunate people, and I understand that. So, years ago, when I say maybe 12 years or 10 years ago, the union called a meeting. It's been more than 10, maybe 15 years ago, they called a meeting of the jazz community. In other words, trying to get jazz musicians involved. This one guy that was here, who still works here, Dave Sheldon, was a jazz fan. And I used to see him at clubs, but most of the jazz musicians are not really involved in what happens here at the union, because the union is not an organization that really finds work for you. They were secure. If you are a member of the union and you have a contract, if things happen on your job, then they will, at that point, help you on if you have any grievances with wherever you're working. And I came to this meeting. There were about 30 musicians, jazz musicians, at the meeting, and the union started to talk about wanting to go into the clubs and make sure that we had dressing rooms and just our grievances generally. And at that point, I listened to what the union had to say for the whole meeting, and at the end of the meeting, they wanted us to vote to send the union into the clubs. And at the end of the meeting, I listened to everything, and I got up and said to the guys, look, first of all, most of us have no idea what the union is about. We have a card, but the union has never addressed anything that we've been involved in. So I don't need the union. I'm going to sign a petition to send the union in, and when they go to a club, the owners of the club are going to say, well, who sent you? And the union is going to start to rattle off names. I say, I can get fired from a club on my own. I don't need any help.
Right.
You know, I mean, I don't know what a representative is going to say in my behalf. So I said, why am I going to send somebody in for what? The union's never done anything for me. And at that point, I said, Jimmy Owens and Jamil Nasser and a few guys at the meeting who were guys who did a lot of work, I said, look, let's organize. Let's put something together and tell the union what our needs are. You know, let's not have them dictate to us what they want us to have. Let me tell you what I need. If you can't suit my needs, there's no reason for me to be here. Right. I don't have to be in the union to work. It's nice to be in the union to work, but I don't need the union. They don't play for me when I go to a club to work. So we organize. So we have a jazz advisory committee put together, and we tell the union what our needs. At that point, the union saw that I was very vocal in what was happening, but I was covered because I'm doing Sesame Street, I'm doing all of these TV shows. I don't care what they think about me. I'm bringing a lot of money into the union, so I'm going to be very frank and very open. I'm not going to mince. I don't play, you know. It's not a game with me. Mm-hmm. The jazz community, that's my family. And I want to see that things are happening for them.
Right.
And this is how I got involved. At that point, they asked me. They saw I was a big mouth. So they said, well, it's better to have him inside than outside causing problems. So Jimmy Owens and I are two of the people who spend a lot of time working and trying to get our message out to the jazz musicians. There are younger guys who are playing. Most of the older guys my age, if they had monies in their pensions, they didn't know about. They send a thing around every year, but when guys get things from the union, they throw it away.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because they don't know whether there's a bill or whatever, because we've never been involved. With me here, it's become a warmer situation among the musicians. They know at least they have somebody who is trying to look out for their behalf and what they're involved in. And I understand what they do because this is what I do. I've done outside things, but the jazz, again, but jazz is not my whole menu, but it is my dessert.
Right.
For sure, you know. Uh-huh. I do other things. I enjoy playing other things. but jazz is my dessert. That's really my living. So at that point, I got involved, and I come in. I didn't ask for a lot of money to work here because I want the people, really the ladies who you see working around here, they're doing the work. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm getting the gravy and they're doing the work.
Right.
So I want them to get paid. What I do, I'm going to do whether they pay me or not. This is what, because that's what I'm about as a person and being involved, because I'm receiving rewards. I've been taking my pension ever since 1994, and it's huge, and it's still going up. So I'm fortunate. I've been blessed. I used to come here years ago, and I would see all of these guys come, and they would be using the phones. And I mean, I really didn't know a lot about the union at that time, but I would come by and pick up recording checks, or if I had monies from Sesame Street and all of that, you had to pick up your checks here.
Yes.
So I would come in and I would see things happening that were strange to me. And I noticed that all of the people, most of the guys had homes in Florida. And I mean, it was a whole different kind of scene.
Mm-hmm.
But they left us out.
Mm-hmm.
People like Dizzy, people like the Modern Jazz Quartet, the Sonny Rollinses, all of these people didn't have big pensions because they had no idea about a pension. Nobody really told us, if you do this, this is how this works, and so forth.
Right.
You know, and even guys working in clubs around, black and white, working in some of the clubs, they thought monies were going into their pension. It was work dues that was taken out, and they thought that these monies were pension monies.
Mm-hmm.
So all the way around, we were not informed, we didn't know, and we didn't ask any questions. Now, my big thing, years ago, they came up with a rule that you couldn't work on your off night. If you worked 5 nights a week or 6 nights, you couldn't work on the off night. I could understand it as far as creating work for other musicians,
mm-hmm.
but it didn't make sense to me because I had a family. So
and for someone to tell you that you can't
you
work.
You can't. So
if work is available.
Again, I was working, doing all of these TV shows and so forth, but I was working with Peggy Lee.
Mm-hmm. Oh.
And somebody reported me doing all of these extra things. Somebody came in. So the board here at the union sent me a letter saying they wanted me to come before the board. They were fining me $1,500.
Wow.
For working on my off days. I came in, a table like we're sitting around, all of these guys sitting around this table, and I come in and they say, "Mr. Crenshaw, we're fining you $1,500 for working or going against the rules."
Mm-hmm.
I jumped up on this table.
On the table?
Yes. And said, "The first MF in this room that mm-hmm. tells me that I can't provide for my family, I'm going to kick his teeth out."
Okay.
I mean, I had to go crazy on
it. Right, right.
So I went around each guy at the table. I said, "Now tell me that I can work and provide for my family, and your teeth are gone."
With you standing on the table.
Yeah, I'm standing, so my foot is right at their face. Nobody said a word. I stepped down off the table and I walked out the door. I never heard any more about it. But why should I have to go there?
Right.
Why take me to that point?
Right.
You know, and of course the story went all around. You know, so I became, for a minute, I guess I was a frightening individual because I went ballistic, you know. And at that point I said, "Okay, I'll join, you know, let me help you try to help rather than to fight you about it. Let's see if we can come find ways of being able to help the musicians."
Mm-hmm.
Right now, I don't push guys joining. I'm not an official that asks guys, "You got to be in the union."
Mm-hmm.
I want each jazz player to understand how the system works.
Right.
If you want to be involved, okay. If you don't, then that's on you. I don't want to hear you come back and say later on, "Well, I shoulda, I coulda, I woulda." This is how it works.
Mm-hmm.
I have a son who's a bass player.
I was going to talk about him later, but let's start at the beginning.
Okay.
So you were born on December 10th,
1932.
Yeah, which makes you 77.
Yes. A lucky 77.
Yes. And I understand that you started on drums and piano and switched to tuba and bass.
Yes.
How do you make that transition
well,
in that school?
Well, I started with piano when I was probably 3 or 4.
Okay.
And I played by ear. I studied piano and I studied for a whole year. And then the teacher found out I wasn't reading anything. She would play the lesson and I'd hear it, and that was it. I'd go out and play baseball all week and come back and play the same thing that she played.
Wow.
So it was a gift.
Mm-hmm.
you know.
And this was in Evanston?
In Evanston, Illinois, yeah. Yes. And so then my father was a drummer, but he was an electrical engineer. I had a brother who was also studying piano, who was really a great pianist, but at a young age he was strung out. So he came to New York and he worked the early days with Miles and people, but at that point a lot of the guys were messed up with drugs. I started to study. I wanted to be a concert percussionist. I didn't want to play jazz drums. I wasn't at that point really interested in jazz. I heard it all the time, and I heard my brother playing, but I wasn't sure whether I was interested in wanting to be a jazz musician. And then I decided, well, after studying drums from the fourth grade all the way to college, I decided, I heard Milt Hinton in Chicago with a group. They had the Battle of the Bands on the radio. This was before TV, and they always had two groups, and they would battle each other. The two bands would play opposite each other. And Milt Hinton came in with a band, and when I heard him play the bass, it sounded and it felt so good. I say, wow, that's what I want to play, the bass. So I started to study the bass. And at that point, I wasn't looking for a classical. I wanted to study and just learn the instrument. There were not that many blacks in classical music, so I really wasn't going in that direction. I just wanted to learn to be proficient in playing the instrument.
I understand you also play tuba.
I learned to play tuba in Korea while in college. I was a very stubborn young guy, and rather than to go to ROTC in college at that point, you had to be in ROTC for 2 years. And I guess I was a conscientious objector in my heart at that time, so I wouldn't go to class. And I got a dishonorable discharge from the class. I was making great grades in school, but when I got the dishonorable discharge, that set me up for the draft. And I was at Bradley University at that time, and I was going into my sophomore year, and I came home the first semester of my sophomore year, and there was my papers to go. But that was on me. I had to be responsible for it. I messed up, you know. So I took my medicine, and I went to the Army, and I was in Korea during the war. But 1953, they needed to put a band together in Korea for a general that was coming there. So they found musicians who played different instruments, and they needed somebody to play tuba. Nobody but that played tuba. So I knew all of the marches from playing them on the string bass. So I knew them in my head. I knew. A guy showed me a fingering, B flat, some scales, and I played it by ear. I already knew the things, and I just started to play it. I took it and played it.
And you were a natural, obviously, because, I mean, it's not as though you could just blow like you're, you know, whistling or something.
After 2 weeks, I had enough to be able to play through that, and I continued. In fact, a couple of years ago, one of my friends, Ben Brown, bass player, had a show, and I was going to sub for him. He was playing tuba in the show, so I was getting ready to go buy a tuba so I could really get my chops together to sub in the show, but it closed before I got to it. But I had a good time, you know, playing the tuba, because I knew, again, playing by ear, my ear helped me again. Once I learned, I got proficient on the instrument, I was fine with it.
Tell me about Walter Perkins, MJT plus three.
Oh, that was great. Walter Perkins and I met in the Army. And we had a band together with a guy named Plas Johnson, who is in L.A., who is one of the big studio players out there now. It was in the service. I was a drummer also for my company in the Army, and he was in another company, and they used to try to get me to play to throw them off. We would be passing each other, and to try to throw the other company off, we would play these games against each other, you know. And we met in a guy named Richard Evans.
Oh, Richard Evans, another bassist.
Yes.
He was at Chess.
Yes.
He was on Sugar My Bowl as well.
Oh, yeah? Well, we put a band together while in the service. And we all met. Richard and Walter and I knew each other from Chicago because we all grew up together. When in Chicago, Walter put together a group called MJT Plus 3, the Modern Jazz 2 Plus 3. Mm-hmm. So it was Walter, Harold Mayburn, and myself, his rhythm section, and a guy named Frank Strozier, and Willie Thomas, the horns. We had Richard Abrams, was also one of the piano players with us over the years. I mean, it was a great group. And when we came to Chicago, very organized. The group was tight.
That would be Mulhall, Richard Abrams.
Yes,
okay.
Mulhall, yeah. I think he was the first piano player with the group.
Okay.
And he wrote a lot of things for us. But we had a very good group. I mean, it was on a high level and great players. But you had to come to New York to really make the name. We had names in Chicago, but again, New York is the place that you've got to go to really get it happening.
Right.
And we came to New York with this group, but we really couldn't get work. It was just funny to me when we played. I could see the New York musicians would come to the Five Spot where we were playing, and they would look at us, and I could see the frowns and so forth. You know, it was just strange. It kind of hurt in a way because they didn't seem like they wanted to accept us as outsiders. You know, we were not the norm, and so I'm watching the guys, and I'm kind of feeling a little bad because you want to be accepted by your peers and so forth. And I look, and I just said, okay, they don't seem to want me. And because they don't seem to want me, I'm going to stay.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they got me whether they want me or not. I'm here.
Right.
And that was kind of it. Walter and I stayed together for years after the MJT. We kind of split up because we couldn't get any work here.
And that was in 62.
Yeah. So, well, that was in, we split up, yeah, I guess in 1960 or 61. But before that, we split up before that time because Walter and I went with Carmen McRae.
Oh.
When I got here, I went with Carmen for about 2 or 3 years. And I left Carmen, Walter and I, and joined Sonny Rollins in 1960.
Nice.
Been a little delinquent, let me be quick about this. What you're listening to right now is Sonny Rollins from The Bridge, the title cut, and our featured guest, Bob Cranshaw, is the bassist. Let's see who we have here. We have Ben Riley. Oh, gosh, you know, this has been quite the day, as indeed. And we've got mood lighting in this station here, so it's not really helpful. But in any event, I can see now. Sonny Rollins on tenor sax, Jim Hall on guitar, Bob Crenshaw on bass. Unfortunately, we don't have Walter Perkins on drums, but we have Ben Riley on drums. And before that, we heard from Walter Perkins, MJT plus 3, from Make Everybody Happy, I think it was. It was Richie's Dilemma from Make Everybody Happy, written by Harold Mayburn. And for those who are listeners of Creative Unity Collective, Michael Mayburn is his son, one of the CC, the Creative Unity CCC. Oh, it's CUC, excuse me, the CUC. One of the members of the CUC, Michael Mayburn, his father, was a member of the MJT plus 3. And let's see what we have here. We have, oh God, Bob Crenshaw on bass, of course. We have, Walter Perkins on drums, of course. Frank Strozier on alto sax. Willie Thomas on trumpet. That song was written by Harold Mayburn, but he wasn't in this collective, but he was in the group in the beginning. In any event, let me stop talking over Sonny Rollins and mention that before that we heard Hank Mobley from High Voltage, and there's Blue Mitchell on trumpet, Jackie McLean on alto sax, Hank Mobley on tenor sax, John Hicks on piano, and Bob Crenshaw on bass, Billy Higgins on drums. Right back to the bridge. Stay tuned for more Sugar in My Bowl. This is Joyce Jones. And hold it together. This is WBAI in New York, 99.5 FM.
Yeah, he was the first drummer, and Jim Hall, Walter Perkins, and I. And that was also a funny experience with Walter. I mean, we had played together. Walter and I were like a pair around Chicago. Walter, as far as a drummer, had one of the best feels. When he played, you're talking about swinging, it just felt so good. And we would finish our jobs in Chicago we played with the trio, Eddie Higgins Trio, and we would finish work and go to another club, and when people saw us walk in the door, they knew we were going to sit in. And then we would sit in and we'd cook, we'd burn the club down, play two or three numbers, and then leave and go to another club and burn on that, you know. So we really had a reputation in Chicago for being great players, but of great energy. And then when I moved to New York, I just felt the same. I moved my family, and my thing was I wanted to play jazz if it were possible, but I played club dates and with other kind of things. I wanted to play, and I really didn't care what it was as long as I could make a living playing music. I would find music, jazz was again the dessert. It wasn't my whole meal. Like I wanted to play other things. I've worked with a lot of singers.
WBAI New York, 99.5 FM. Oh, and by the way, you're listening to the title cut, Cutting Edge, by Sonny Rollins. I'll explain more, but if you want to chat, I can tell you off of the air. You can give me a call at 212-209-2900, 212-209-2900. You can also hear... Well, you could tell your friends who weren't able to listen that they could go to the archives, and it would be via wbai.org. It's www.wbai.org. And once again, if you want to chat, you can call me in the studio at 212-209-2900.
So you joined Sonny Rollins, and you've been with him for, what, over 48 years?
Yeah, close to 50 years.
Yeah.
I've been on and off. Like, I've been with Sonny, and I would leave because I was doing a TV show, Saturday Night Live, and all of those things, and it was really hard to, because of doing so many studio things. But Sonny would call me. As Sonny was trying a different drummer, he would call me to play with the drummer. Because Sonny and I just kind of, Sonny said, I went to play with Sonny. His bass player was out of town, or someone was in Europe. And I went to play a gig with Sonny, and I didn't ask any questions. But he said he noticed he played a tune, and he changed keys, and I went right with him.
Mm-hmm.
And he said at that point, he said he knew that I was his bass player. And even now, I say very little. I feel, I've been playing with him long enough to, I feel what he's going to do. I kind of know where he's going, and I just lay the bottom. I'm a bottom player. I like to stay home.
Right.
You know, Sonny is a superstar. I'm a star.
Right, right.
I put it that way. Sure. So I'm blocking so that he can run the touchdown.
Right.
Now, Sonny is that's an incredible musician.
Yes.
I mean, he's a master.
He's a superstar.
Yeah, he's a superstar. Right. I mean, I really, if I could do what he does, if I can, playing with him is an honor, but he plays, there's so much there, I can't remember it. You know, when I get ready, he'll play something, and I'll have it in mind, and I'm trying to digest it musically, but then he plays something else, and he blows what I thought I was thinking about. He cancels my thoughts out, you know, because he plays so much. Here's a guy that practices 6 and 8 hours, 12 hours a day, and I admire that. You know, I think that's great. I can't even listen to 8 hours of music. You know, I need a basketball game or a baseball game or something in between. But I see what happens when you spend that kind of time. It's something to watch. I wish I could do it, you know, but I'm not that kind of driven guy. I can't really do it. But I admire people who are able to do it.
Let's talk about the TV and Broadway work, actually. TV, you did, as you mentioned, David Frost.
Yes.
How was it doing David Frost back in that time? I suspect there weren't too many musicians of color.
Playing in the studios, I mean, again, they always had token you know, one or two. The Hank Jones, you know, Hank was one of the people who were embedded. I was really surprised. I went to the Ed Sullivan show, and Hank, whether it was classical music, he covered it all. But he was a master. This is another master. I can go hear Hank by himself and that kind of thing. But these are masters. These are our masters. They were, you know.
And unfortunately, Hank Jones was transitioned.
Yeah, I spent a lot of time with him in the latter years, up until his passing. Because when he had the heart attack, I used to go and walk him. I wanted him to get up and move. I didn't want to lose him, so I was going to do everything I could to keep him here, you know. And I followed him and spent time with him all the way until he passed.
So you were talking about David Frost and how it was.
Yeah, it was a great. It was a great show. It was a Billy Taylor was the conductor, and I worked with Billy. I was playing with Billy's trio. It was a time for me when I had so much work, you know, because I was doing the David Frost TV show 5 days a week. I was doing another show, a David Frost review, that was kind of like a comedy show on Saturdays and Sundays. I was doing Sesame Street in the mornings from 10 to 2 or 3, you know, and it got to be a lot. And Billy Taylor had some things after. We were working on clubs. After the David Frost show, we would go to a club and play for 5 or 6 nights. And I did that for a long time until I was just exhausted. I mean, I was just wasted. And so Billy wanted whoever was doing the show as part of his trio. So, you know, I said, look, I went to Billy, and I really enjoyed doing the show, but it was just becoming, I was overworked. I was doing more than, you know, I didn't have time to spend with my family or doing other things. So after doing the show for 2 years or 2-3 years, I went to Billy and gave my notice and bowed out. Now, it was a lot of money. It paid very well. But I had been asked to do the Tonight Show also with Doc Severinsen. Mm-hmm. Grady Tate was doing the show. He was a drummer, and he was doing it with a white bass player. They wanted me to do it with Ed Shaughnessy because it was two drummers, and they would trade days doing it. And I was going to do it with Ed Shaughnessy, but I was already doing the David Frost show. So I had a young bass player that I was mentoring, and John Williams was a bass player, was in New York, and he worked with Horace Silvers and a lot of different groups. And I said to Doc, I was doing the Leon Bibb show at NBC. And so I said, look, there's a young bass player that's subbing for me on the show. Doc, I think he would be ideal to do the show. And he went with the Tonight Show, and he went with them to California.
Okay.
And he did the show out there, and then he and Doc fell out for some reason. And he ended up doing the Arsenio Hall show.
Oh, okay.
He was a bass player for that show after. And I just stayed with the David Frost thing. But again, I was trying to pass work around. This was something, and I knew that John Williams was a very great bass player, very capable. After doing the show, I decided I was kind of tired, so I said, look, let me go. I want to go back to school and work on a master's. And so I left Billy. I left the David Frost show. And I'm home, and I'm starting just to wind down and to relax.
But you were still doing Sesame Street, right?
Yeah, I was still doing Sesame Street. And at that point, there was a young bassist named Gary King, who the electric bass, incredible bass player, just wonderful. He was doing Jesus Christ Superstar. Mm-hmm. And he was the only black musician in the pit at that time. and he was in there with a group called Randall's Island. Elliot Randall was a guitarist who did a lot of studio work, but they had a group, and they were the rhythm section for Jesus Christ Superstar. Gary had, I don't know whether he was Seventh-day Adventist or Jehovah's Witness, had a religious thing that he was involved in, and Jesus Christ Superstar did make it for him. I mean, he was playing the show. He wouldn't even sit in the pit. He was outside the pit. He played the hell out of the show. I mean, it was incredible. This guy was an incredible bass player. So he called me and said, look, you know, I can't play the show. I'm, you know, for religious reasons, I'm going to have to leave the show. So I said, okay, let me get some songs for you. I wanted to put another black musician in his place. I didn't want him just up and leave.
Right.
I said, let's get somebody and let him study the book. And so he said, okay. So we started to get names together to go in to check the show. One Thursday evening, I get a call at 6:30 from Gary, and he said, I can't take it anymore. I'm not going in. I said, wait a minute, you can't do that. If you don't go in, I said, there will not be any other black musicians in this show if you walk out like that. He said, I can't take it anymore. It's 7 o'clock. The show starts at 10 after 8. It's a downbeat. I grab my bass. I finish dinner. I'm not really in any mood. I haven't seen the show. I don't know what the music involves. But now I'm stuck because he's not going to go in. And we're really, I mean, so I said, okay, I got to go. I don't have any choice. It's either going there fumbling over the music or without, you know, no bass player, nothing there, or somebody who looks like he's going to play the music. And that's what it was. So I grabbed my bass. I get to the theater at 20 minutes to 8. I got 20 minutes. I open the book to look at the music, and it's all messed up because they knew the music. The rhythm section, they already knew it. They didn't. So I said, oh, man, you know, what am I going to do? But I got to stay. I stayed. I played the show. Now, not knowing the other guys in the rhythm section, all of the guys in the rhythm section really wanted to be jazz musicians, but they were not in the jazz family. So they welcomed me when I came in. I played the show, and I think I did a decent job without knowing the music or whatever, and they really helped me, but they enjoyed that Bob Cranshaw was there. So it helped me. That's when the name and me being very open to people, I ended up, they paid me the same money that I was making during the David Frost show. So I stayed.
Excellent.
I mean, the show, it was incredible. It was incredible with some wonderful musicians. These young kids played the hell out of the show.
My mind is clearer now. At last, all too well, I can see where we all soon will be. If you'd strip away the myth from the man, you'll see where we all soon will be. Jesus! I don't like
to me. And remember, I've been your right hand man all along. You have set them on fire. They think they found the new Messiah. And they'll hurt you when they find they're wrong. Remember when this whole thing began? No talk of God, then we called you a man. And believe me, my admiration for you hasn't died. But every word you say today gets twisted round some other way. And they'll hurt you if they think you lied. Nazareth, you're famous and should have stayed a great unknown, like his father carving wood. He'd have made good tables, chairs, and oaken chests would have suited Jesus, and he'd have caused nobody harm, no one alarmed. Listen, Jesus, do you care for your race? Can't you see we must keep in our place? We are occupied. Have you forgotten how put down we are? I am frightened by the crowd. For we are getting much too loud. And they'll crush us if we go too far. If we go too far. Listen, Jesus, to this warning I give. Please remember that I want us to live. But it's so sad to see our chances weakening with every hour. All your followers are blind. Too much heaven on their minds. It was beautiful, but now it's sour. This is all, it's gone sour.
At that point, you started to use electric bass.
Yeah. Which was one of the few. I mean, I'm one of the few.
But I started playing, I remember years ago in Chicago, I got called for a gig. I walk in the club with my bass. The club owner looks at me and says, oh, wow. You know, it was with an organ group. But I had no idea who I was playing for or with. I just got a call. I went to the club. He looked at me and said, they're not going to hear that. The bass was, we didn't amplify string bass at that time. Mm-hmm. He said, they're not going to hear that, you know, with an organ, drums and guitar. He said, I have an amplifier over here, and I have an electric bass. Can you play it? I said, yeah. I was going to take that money. I wasn't leaving there without that money. I said, no, are you kidding? I'm going home with this bread tonight, you know. So I said, yeah, I can play it.
And you hadn't touched one before?
No. But I assume it got four strings.
Right.
So I didn't go into it with a mental process of I couldn't play it. Now, I kind of struggled. I didn't say that it was the best playing, mm-hmm. but I made the night on it, and then I didn't touch it again for years until I came to New York. But as the studio things in New York started to change, the Milt Hintons, the George DeVivier's, the Ron Carter's, the Richard Davis's, all of a sudden we were all thrown into the bag of, because the people we were working for, the writers, everything started to be electric bass. Mm-hmm. Now the guys who played electric bass, it was a field day for them because they were already accustomed to the instrument. But for us, it was a big change. And Ron did dates on electric bass, but he didn't like it. Mm-hmm. I mean, it just was not comfortable. I said to myself, it's four strings. I'm going to make a big deal about it. The same thing I play on one, I'm going to play on the other. I know when I'm playing the electric, if I'm playing with an acoustic piano player, I got to make it sound and feel like he's playing with an acoustic bass, because that's what he's accustomed to hearing. But for us, the Ray Browns in our office, it was a big change, because now we're into electronics and we're into playing the string bass through an amplifier. That's foreign to us. And this is a thing that all of us at my age, we had to experience this, and it was not an easy transition. I mean, I watched Ron play, and we went through all kind of things with trying to make an electric bass that had a neck more like a string bass. With the studio work, you work through contractors, and these are guys that have called you for work for years.
Right.
So all of a sudden, they don't care how you make the change. They're looking for you to make the change because they want you to do this date.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the guys that call Ron Carter, they want Ron Carter on the date, but now he's got to play electric bass. He's got to play the bass guitar. I mean, it was very hard. But I was able to make the switch in my state of mind.
Listening to Bob Cranshaw. He's having a conversation with him at a local 802 Musicians Union here in New York. Let me tell you what you're listening to right now, Duke Pearson. This is from I Don't Care Who Knows It. This is actually one of my favorite Duke Pearson recordings because it has that samba, bossa nova thing going on. This was on the Blue Note label. The Blue Note label. And this is called Captain Bicardi. It's not spelled with an A, but like the drink. It's B-I-C-A-R-D-I. Captain Bicardi. This is an Antonio Carlos Jobim song. And let's see who's on this date. Well, Bob Cranshaw on bass. And somebody on a beer and bow. Let's see. Yes. Ayerto Morera on vocals and percussion. Al Gibbons on... It's too dark in here. I'll tell you. And I'm holding this thing further and further away. Al Gibbons on flute. Jerry Doggin on alto sax. Lou Tabaxin on... Oh, goodness. Drum. No? No. Yes. Yes. Oh, my God. Now I'm seeing triple. I'm sorry. I'm sorry, folks. Let's see. Bobby Hutcherson on vibes. Ralph Towner on guitar. Wally Richardson on electric guitar. Bob Cranshaw, of course, on bass. Mickey Roker is on drums. Yes. Ooh, ooh. Okay. And this was released in 1969 on the, as mentioned, Blue Note label. Before that, we heard Ben Vereen, Heaven on Their Minds from the Jesus Christ Superstar original cast album. Don't know whether Bob Cranshaw is actually on this recording, because they only mentioned that Randall's Island is on the recording and not the individual Randall's Island members. And before that, we heard Sonny Rollins from The Cutting Edge, the title cut. Sonny Rollins, tenor sax. Stanley Cowell on piano. Masuo, M-A-S-U-O, on guitar. Bob Cranshaw, electric bass. David Lee on drums. Mtume, yes, that would be James Mtume, on conga, drums, and percussion. Rufus Harley on other recordings, on other recordings on this Cutting Edge. Rufus Harley plays bagpipes. As a matter of fact, he's on Swing Low, and I like Rufus Harley. And yeah, so stay tuned for more Sugar in My Bowl, Bob Cranshaw. My name's Joyce Jones, and this is WBAI New York, 99.5 FM.
Wind up doing all of that Blue Note work?
I think being reliable, being there, enjoying playing with the other guys, really making it fun for the people who I was playing with. If you said be there at 7 o'clock, I was there. If you said be at the rehearsal, I was there. And I tried to help most of the guys a lot. It was during a transition period for a lot of the guys, because there were a lot of drugs, there were a lot of things happening, so I had to help these people be able to make it through the dates and so forth. But I was helpful in many ways because I was on time. They didn't have to worry about me. I came as a side man to offer my services.
It's going to happen, something big is going to happen. My feeling, something very big. It's going to happen, it's going to happen right here. Something new and something exciting, something new and something exciting will happen, something very new and very exciting. It's going to happen this year. Something bigger than monsters and oceans is coming to stay. But nothing bigger than freedom, and freedom is coming our way. Something big is going to happen, something big is going to happen. Like freedom, something freedom big is going to happen, and it's going to happen this year right now. Something big is going to happen, something big is going to happen. I feel it, something very big is going to happen, it's going to happen right here. Something new and something exciting, something new and something exciting. It happens, something very new and very exciting, and it's going to happen.
Got a certain little cute way of flirting with them, their eyes. They make me feel so happy, they make me blue. No stalling, I'm falling in a great big way for you. My heart is jumping, you sure started something with them, their eyes. You'd better watch them if you're wise. They sparkle, they bubble. They'll get you in a whole lot of trouble. You're overworking them. There's danger lurking in them eyes. and with them their eyes. You'd better watch them if you're wise. The little brown eyes sparkle, bubble, they get you in a whole lot of trouble. I'm looking for the boy with the wistful eyes, 'cause I fell in love with them their eyes.
When I hear that beat, well, well, I just can't control my own 2 feet, well, well. Guess I better go and join the act and do some of this and some of that. First I will do the twist, just like the twisters do, well, well. Then I will mash some spuds with the toe of my shoe, well, well. Everybody come and join the act and do some of this and some of that. Well, come on. Come on, everybody, get a partner by the hand. Girl, come on. Come on, everybody, take advantage of a rocking band. Well, come on, everybody, and join the act and you can do some of this and some of that. Junior man, come on. Yeah, come on. Some of that, and now it's time to stop. So form a line, a ding dong. 'Cause believe it or not, it's hully gully time. Hey, come on, everybody, and join that, and you can do some of this and some of that. Well, come on. Well, everybody, come on. Oh, well, come on. Everybody and join the act and you can do this.
How do you feel working with vocalists?
I love it.
Yeah.
Which is another thing. Guys would ask me, jazz players all the time, man, why do you play with all of those singers? I say, because I get paid. You know, I mean, there were jazz groups. I wanted to work with Art Blakey so bad because we have the same kind of feel. Horace Silver, there were people who I really wanted to work with because we have the same rhythmic feel. But it was too much drug things happening at that time. And I don't want to be paid in some smack. I mean, I need money. I got kids.
Right.
So I was always aware. I didn't put anybody down. I just couldn't go in that direction, which hurt my heart because these are people I really wanted to, I wanted to spend more time with, and I wasn't able to do. I was able to play with Art a little bit, but not like I wanted to. I was able to play with Horace, although he wasn't into drugs and so forth.
So were the singers not doing drugs? Is that
but they were cool. But they had the gigs, and they had the gigs to pay the money. But I enjoy a company now. Same thing that I give to Sonny Rollins and the rest of the group, I'm going to put under them, too. If I'm there, you're going to get it tonight. That was my feeling.
Right.
You know, and they knew that. I mean, I love to accompany people. I can do that all day and all night, and it's not like any work to me. So that's my singer thing. And yeah. I work with tons of singers.
Yeah, Ella Fitzgerald.
Ella, Carmen McRae.
Joe Williams,
Charles Aznavour, Liza Minnelli, Judy Collins. I sang backgrounds with Judy.
Did you?
Yeah.
I played bass
and sang backgrounds. No, we didn't record.
Oh.
She had background singers for a while, and then it became hard traveling with the background singers, so I sang background.
You like to sing?
Yes.
You going to do more of it?
Yes.
You going to record?
I want to put, but not as a soloist.
Yeah, yeah.
I want to put something together now with a jazz thing, but with some vocal backgrounds. Because when people hear the voice, it brings you in. I kind of got some of the ideas. My son worked with Steely Dan.
Right.
And listening to some of the things that a group like a Steely Dan, they've taken from us, but we never use any of the things that they do.
Right. You know, Bobby Hutcherson, he used vocalists on Now, that recording.
Oh, yeah?
I thought you were on that recording.
I just remember being on the recordings and having a wonderful time with the guys. I mean, that was important.
WBAI New York 99.5 FM, Sugar in My Bowl. And, let me be quick here because I really don't like talking, but hey, this is the only way you're going to know. Before what we're listening to right now, actually, what we are listening to right now is a solo. I'll come back later.
University. I did a recording and I start out playing a line. The record starts with me playing a thing in front. And I'm listening. I'm getting ready to play with the professors at this university for a graduate class. I'm looking at the music and the kids are laughing, you know. I'm saying, what the hell is this? I say, Mr. Crenshaw, this is what you played on the record. It was Joe Henderson's record of Inner Urge.
Okay.
And I start out playing a line, a thing, you know. And the kids at school, and they're looking, you know, and I'm looking at this. I can't remember, you know. Most of the records that I've been on, very few have I heard. You know, I hear, like, sometimes I hear things, but people have to tell me. I can kind of tell what I'm doing, you know. But generally, I've done too many things, and I don't listen to myself. I'd rather hear somebody else. That was one of my problems with some of the Blue Note things. I would go to Duke Pearson. I said, Duke, please call somebody else. There's so many great bass players. I don't want to have the guys pissed at me because I'm doing all of the things. Me and Ron Carter are bogarting everything, and there's too many great players here. I want to hear somebody else, too. I mean, I'd love to do the work. I need the money, but I want to hear somebody else also. But I understood why, again, because, again, they knew that I was dependable. I was going to be there. And the guys knew that I would take care of business. I'm not going to let up with, I don't care who it is, so. Playing the whole date, we're at the end of the date. It was during a period where Lee Morgan was just kind of getting his health situation together from the drugs and the different things. We recorded everything and we needed one more tune. Lee Morgan goes into the bathroom to Rudy Van Gelder's. We don't know what he's doing. I don't know whether he's shooting up, whether he what, you know. But he's in there and it's 10 minutes, 15 minutes, 20 minutes, you know. He comes out the bathroom and he passes his sheet out. It's Sidewinder.
Oh, goodness. He wrote it in the bathroom.
He wrote it in the bathroom. So it was a very funny experience,
right?
Because now this is a kind of funky feel tune. So I remember Barry Harris saying, I've never been on a hit record. But Barry is a bebop piano player more so than a funk piano player. For Herbie Hancock and so forth, that would have been more in his line of groove things. But I remember Barry saying, I've never been on a hit. Now, we didn't think about it at that time. It was a different feel kind of thing. So they asked me, Lee said, Bob, play a pickup into the tune. So, okay, I'm a person of very modest notes. I don't play a lot of notes. I play the bottom of the thing. So I came up with doom, 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 doom.
Right.
Okay, now we played it. I didn't write it down. It wasn't written. It was just, that's how what I played for a pickup into the tune. The tune was close to 15 minutes long. When we got through and we got ready to take it out, I didn't remember that I played doom, 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 doom. I had no idea what I played because I didn't write it down. I just came up as part of, you know, boom, 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 boom. That was just a thought within the process. We got ready to take it out and we had to stop. So if you listen to the tune, they had to splice it because I had to go back. They had to stop the tape, go back and play what I played in the beginning. And then from that time, I played it again and they took the tune out. But you can hear just a little hesitation because they had to splice it. They had to add it on to us playing the other
parts. Okay. Wow.
See, people don't know about all of these things happening. You
know. You know, you were talking about, you said something once, like jazz musicians have to stop being frightened of the light bulb. Now, you were talking about the transition between acoustic to electric bass. I'm going to ask this question with regard to the concept of jazz fusion. You know what I mean? Like Weather Report.
I enjoyed all of that. To me, has a place.
Oh, okay.
You know, Jaco and the whole thing. A transition. He brought the bass out. He put the bass out front. Mm-hmm. And that was a good thing. And more of the bass players now, the younger bass players, they all come, you know, they played that style, and it's incredible. I'm still on the electric. I'm still the old style. I'm still the thump and peck, you know, of the old style bass player. I don't try to play the fusion and so forth as much. I have a son who's really into it, but then he's also an incredible bass player. So,
well, actually, we should probably start talking about your son. Your son, Tom Barney.
Yes.
Yes. Who is a bassist.
Yes.
With Steely Dan.
He's not with them now. They change all the time. He was with them for 3 years.
Oh, okay.
But I got a chance to hear a lot being around them as they would rehearse and just sitting and listen to things and enjoying. Here's a guy. They have a crossover thing within their music because they've taken a lot from the jazz. They listen to us, and it was always puzzling to me because we really don't take any of the things that the electrical players, anything that they use within their music. And I kind of learned a lot about that through listening to Steely Dan. I went to one of their, my son, they were at Madison Square, and it's packed. And that stuff is swinging so hard. I'm screaming. When I got home, I couldn't talk. I was screaming. I was like some young kid. It was incredible.
She's late, zooming on a couch somewhere. Oh, hi, go home. I'm not supposed to call her there. I wait, I smoke, I stare into my coat. It's happening.
All right, let me be quick about this. You're listening to Sugar in My Bowl, a conversation with Bob Crenshaw. My name's Joyce Jones, and this is WBAI New York 99.5 FM. You're listening to Steely Dan right now from Two Against Nature. This is Negative Girl. Bob Crenshaw's son, Tom Barney, is the bassist on this recording. And let's see. I think I need glasses. That's probably it. I need glasses and light. But yeah, this is Two Against Nature, Steely Dan. And before that, we heard Sidewinder. And the lineup on Sidewinder is Lee Morgan on trumpet, Joe Henderson on tenor sax, Barry Harris on piano, Bob Crenshaw on bass, and Billy Higgins on drums. Before that, we heard Joe Henderson. I got this from the a compilation, the definitive Joe Henderson. Inner Urge. Inner Urge has... Oh, I think it's Elvin Jones, I think. Where? Hello? Oh, there it is, yes. McCoy Tyner on piano, Bob Crenshaw on bass, and Elvin Jones on drums. And once again, this is from the definitive Joe Henderson compilation on the Verve label. And before that, we heard Joe Williams at Newport 63. I actually used the studio version, quote-unquote, studio version of Some of This and Some of That. And Bob Crenshaw was on bass on that recording. And actually, before that we heard... What'd we hear? Oh, yes, we heard Carmen McRae. From Carmen McRae sings Lover Man and other Billy Holiday classics, Them Their Eyes. Bob Crenshaw on bass. Nat Adderley on cornet. Walter Perkins on drums. Mundell Lowe on guitar. and Norman Simmons on piano, and Eddie Lockjaw Davis on sax. And before that, we heard Betty Carter from Inside Betty Carter. That was... Come on, you know what it is. Oh, gosh, the only thing, the thing that keeps standing out in my head is Freedom. But, no, it was called Something Big. Something big is going to happen. And before that, yeah, that was it. Stay tuned for more WBA, for more Sugar in My Bowl on WBAI New York. Oh, by the way, Harold Mayburn on piano, Bob Cranshaw on bass, Roy McCurdy on drums with Kenny Burrell on guitar on Something Big. Stay tuned as we wind it down.
Chose the bass.
Okay.
My friend with me, I tell the one story. He was in college. First of all, I wanted him to get an education. I wanted him to really know what he was doing and how to play it. He was going to Potsdam University upstate, and he was going into his junior year, and he called me and said, "Dad, look, I'm tired of school. I want to play." And he could already play, and so I was very calm. You know, Mom had called me before and said, "Look, he's talking about quitting school, so, you know, be ready." So I said, "Okay." I said, "Look, I want to tell you something. You can quit school if you want, but I want to let you know that you won't work in New York. I'm going to blackball you here, so you'll get nothing. If you quitting school to work here, you won't. You can go to Chicago, you can go to L.A., you can go anywhere else in the United States. You won't work in New York until you come through that door with that piece of paper in your hand." He came through that door with that piece of paper.
And I'm here with Tom Barney. Thank you for seeing me today. So tell me, how has your father influenced you?
Gave me all the essentials. Mm-hmm. You know, not just playing the bass, but just life in general. One thing we did was really cool many years ago was Sinatra. And it was an orchestra. And so he was actually supposed to do the rhythm section portion of the show. You know, he's been there, done it. So he said, "You want to do it?" I said, "Sure." So that was, you know, that was my moment.
Oh, wow.
You know? Yeah, so it was pretty cool.
Yeah.
He's a wealth of information. You know, so, you know, the thing that, you know, I find that's really difficult is, you know, the many areas of music. So, you know, if you're in a studio, that's one thing. If you're doing this is another thing.
In the pit, which is where we are right now.
Exactly.
Of the Lion King.
If you're in the pit, you know, it's a lot, you know, reading, and then you, you know, memorize what you memorize. But, you know, to have all that information, to me, is amazing. But the one thing, that I got from him that I learned early on is that, and I didn't realize until later on in life, was that... when I was a kid, I would be around him, and I'd watch him go from Sesame Street in the morning to a record date with whoever the pop artist was at that time. It could have been Eddie Kendricks or whomever it was he was recording with, and then watch him, you know, do Dizzy at night. So you'd have this gamut, you know, from left to right, music that you could cover in a moment's notice. So I grew up with that. So I didn't realize, you know, generally musicians are one-dimensional in terms of those things. Your jazz or your pop or your this or that. And he was never in a box. And so, That's why I'm here.
It was incredible that kid could read. We're doing a date together on a movie score. Two or three basses. We played a tune, and he's used to going in and sitting down in one take. He's played it. The conductor says, you know, we have to do another take. So he's looking at me saying, you know, why do we have to do another take? I say, because I didn't play mine right. He took care of business.
So is he playing with anyone right now?
Now that there's not as many studio things, he's doing The Lion King. And I told him I'll break his neck if he leaves The Lion King before it closes.
Mm-hmm.
He's got a huge pension. He's building his pension. And it's a gig. If he gets a call from for other things that he do, he, you know, he's sometimes doing some things for Quincy or different places, he can leave and do what he wants and still keep the show. But he can play. I'm proud. I mean, this guy can play. He can play.
Mm.
I'm okay, but he can play.
Well, thank you very much, Bob Crenshaw, for sitting with us.
And I'll do it again for you. I enjoy talking about, you know, I'm trying to put together a book.
Oh.
I've had some happy experiences playing. I'm fortunate. I feel I'm blessed.
Mm-hmm.
And I have to pass it on to young players about what the music is about, but about music business. And that's why I'm here. I don't want to be doing benefits for people to raise money for them as they get older. Pensions and so forth. This stuff, it works.
Oh, by the way, do you have anything coming up?
I'm going to be playing in New York September 10th with Sonny Rollins at the Beacon Theater. So everybody come and check it. Sonny's incredible.
Well, thank you again, Bob Crenshaw.
All right, thank you for sitting with me. I enjoyed it. We have to do more.
Definitely.
Okay. Anytime.
Thank you.
All right.
All right. We need to get up out of here. You have been listening to Sugar in My Bowl on WBAI New York 99.5 FM. I should be back next third Tuesday. Exactly what date is that anyway? All right. Well, we don't have a calendar that I can read. Actually, wait a minute. I have my own. I walk with my calendar. Ain't I clever? Anyway, I think it's the 17th. August 17th, if there's nothing... Ah! Garvey's birthday! If there's nothing else happening on WBAI New York, 99.5 FM. Stay tuned for Mass Backwards and Max Schmied coming up next. And let me get up out of here right now. Stay tuned. Oh, by the way, you can reach Sugar in My Bowl at sugarinmybowl@gmail.com. Sugar, S-U-G-A, in my bowl at gmail.com. And we're on Facebook, too. Stay tuned.
Hello, bueno, this is Sonia Sanchez. I urge you to give your generous support to listener-sponsored community radio, WBAI 99.5 FM in New York.